I'm Glennon Doyle, author of Untamed and host of the podcast We Can Do Hard Things. On We Can Do Hard Things, my wife Abby, my sister Amanda, and I talk honestly about the hard parts of life. Join us and guests like Michelle Obama, Tracy Ellis Ross, and Brené Brown as we have refreshingly honest conversations. New episodes are out every Tuesday and Thursday, so listen to and follow We Can Do Hard Things, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and everywhere you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome back to Well Played. I'm Caroline Hendershot.
And I'm Blake Morgan.
And my voice is on its way out.
I like it. I like that sound on
I
you.
I don't. It's not my favorite. It's not really beautiful.
I kind of want, like I was saying off air, when I was a preteen, I always tried to lose my voice on purpose.
I was saying me too.
Because then people would have to ask you, like, what were you doing this weekend? And I just
classic
wanted the
attention. Youngest child attention seekers.
So bad. It's so embarrassing. Honestly, I still do it today, but that's another story for another day because we have so much to talk about today.
So much.
It's kind of remarkable. We're going to be joined by a special guest. Her name is Nora Princiati, and she's the host of the Every Single Album podcast, also of the Ringer NFL show. She talks a lot about Taylor Swift. You're going to want to stick around for that. We have some questions, but also football as well.
Yeah, I also just learned that Blake isn't like the largest Taylor Swift fan, and that might be... It might be the end of our friendship.
I said no. I think that things can be mended. I just preferred her music before 1989. I liked her when she was a country star.
Okay, I understand that.
I knew the words to Teardrops on My Guitar.
Yeah,
I knew
same. The words to Had that CD.
Our Song, Love yep. Story. Like, mm-hmm. I was there for that. But I think I can be molded.
Okay, I'm willing to take on that challenge.
Yeah.
We've also got our Send It coming up, featuring all the best clips and viral moments you should be sending to the group chat, so don't miss that. We also have a full-length version of this episode out on YouTube, so be sure to search for Well Played by This Game on YouTube, or if you prefer to listen, make sure you follow us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
Yes, and Hendy, before we get into the episode, where can people follow you, keep in touch with you?
You can follow me at CG Hendy on Instagram, Twitter, whatever you prefer to use for social media. I will say this weekend, I posted on Sunday an outfit choice by me. I'd had a little change up, so I obviously was dressed.
Wait, I love that story. It was so cute.
I was dressed to host our pregame and postgame show because I didn't travel to Arizona because the Jets played the Cardinals this weekend. So I was in studio. My thing is that, like, obviously I love to dress up, right? More than that, I love being in sweatpants mm-hmm. and slippers and preferably just, like, laying in bed all day. But so I was wearing a dress and, like, high boots. And so I took off the boots immediately after the pregame show to watch the football game in. Put on sweatpants, put on a sweatshirt, rolled up the dress halfway, and then put on my UGG slippers. Oh,
it was such a look, honestly. Yeah.
And I had to call myself out on it because everyone...
I loved it.
Everyone in the office was, like, making comments about it. And I was like, first of all, comfort over everything, obviously. So, yeah, you can see a lot of pics there if that's what you fancy. Mm-hmm. Where can people follow you?
I fancy that. BL, 3 A's, 4 K's, E on Instagram.
Crushed
that's kind
it.
Of it, honestly.
So, we'll get you. We're going to get her on
TikTok.
We're
still workshopping. After last week's episode, it's basically like every week Sean and I go back to the office and we workshop for a little bit, usernames for me, and then I kind of just forget about it for a week until this recording comes around.
And you have to say the username every time.
I was going to say, and then we start this conversation over again.
Exactly.
So, one day I'll come back with something new.
Maybe. As always, we prepared a roundup of our favorite stories dominating your feeds this week. It's time for Playing the Field. All right, we're starting this edition of Playing Field with a news story that I am obsessed with right now. So before I explain to our listeners, have you seen the viral TikTok of the Boston Bruins players showing support for podcaster Brianna Chicken Fry after her breakup with country star Zach Bryan?
I saw the video, but I was confused.
Yeah, because you don't know the lore.
Okay, please explain. I need a full explainer. Like, I know some of it from TikTok, but I don't know how sports fits into it.
Okay, so essentially, let me preface the TikTok and then I'll go into the lore.
Okay.
So the TikTok is Boston Bruins players walking around their facility singing the Morgan Wallen song, Last Night We Let the Liquor Talk. I know my voice
Your
sounds
country's twang is amazing.
I know. Okay. Give me the Grammy.
Also, Brianna's from Boston.
Yes. So she was born and raised and obviously a huge Boston sports fan. Mm-hmm. So they were all singing that. Now, the reason why it resonates so much is because of the lore. Now, It's a big lore. It's very complicated.
This is turning. This is when the episode turns more pop culture. So yes. Buckle up, Buttercup.
Now, if you have any interest in pop culture, I urge you to listen to the hour and a half episode of the BFFs podcast that Barstool Sports released, because it's essentially Brianna explaining the whole situation start to finish in her perspective. It's very well done. She crushed it. I would have probably been crying the whole time. Mm-hmm. But what happened was Brianna Chicken Fry, that's also her like stage name, or it's like Brianna LaPaglia or something. But Brianna Chicken Fry was dating Zach Bryan for the last year. Zach Bryan, obviously like big country star at the moment, has released a bunch of music that is topped the charts. Mm-hmm. Now, people found out that they broke up because they found him on Raya.
Right.
And so she was like, instead of letting me have this time to like announce it by myself, that was the original agreement. Like, okay, we're going to break up. I'm going to take some time. I'm going to announce it when I'm ready. Please don't say anything. And he was like, cool. Mm-hmm. And then he went on Raya. Obviously, everyone caught him. So then she was like, what the hell? This is messed up. And like during the breakup, Zach Bryan's team offered her $12 million to sign an NDA.
Oh my God.
And so she would not be able to talk about Zach Bryan at all, be able to talk about the relationship. And I think at some point, the lawyers for Zach Bryan were also trying to have her not anyone at Barstool mention Zach Bryan.
Ooh, and good luck with that
one. Brianna was like, I'm not the boss. Like, what are you?
That's what I mean.
I don't have control over that. So they offered it to her and she was like going back and forth because $12 million is a lot of money.
Yeah.
It's life-changing amount of money, especially like I thought, oh, that must not be that much for her. Mm. But her net worth, I think I looked it up, it was like $1 to $3 million.
Which
was
still good for her.
Yeah, great for her.
Also, but, though, like, I didn't realize Zach Bryan had it like that.
No, me either. So he offered her $12 million. Well, the team did. And so she was going back and forth, couldn't decide, was talking to Dave Portnoy about it. And finally, she's like, you know what? I'll sign it. And then they were stalling for a couple days, I think, because they were waiting until after the election so that there was like a different news cycle so that it kind of got
swept under the rug.
Yep, exactly. But in like the couple days that they were stalling, she changed her mind because she was like, screw you guys. You're just like playing with me. You're toying me along. Also, important detail, the $12 million was going to be paid out over 3 years. Mm. So she probably would have never seen the full $12 million. It would have been like some small stipulation that screws her over, whatever. So she's essentially goes on this BFFs podcast, talks all about the breakup, all about the relationship, all about how he was emotionally abusing her. He was just like a terrible person. God. Up front, like the first 4 months of the relationship, like totally made her fall in love with him. And then after that, it was just like flip a switch.
It's so crazy because this is just such a trick of social media. You look at their social media feeds, because like I wasn't even like super into their relationship, but I did hear about them.
Right.
Because like, actually, fun fact, I did party with Brianna LaPaglia one time.
And
Grace O'Malley.
What the hell? When?
Back when I wouldn't stay in and make eggplant parm by myself on a weekend, which is what I did this weekend.
That is so
That was in 2021. Cool. It was a weird time. She wasn't a weird time. She was a great time.
Yeah.
Context was weird, but yeah. That's for another episode.
Okay. I'm going to come back to that one. That's fun. But no, like he would post her on
That's what I mean.
His Instagram story being like, oh my God, she looks so beautiful. She looks so good. Yeah. And behind the scenes, he would be like, I can't believe you're wearing that dress. Like, unfollowed her over like the Grammy dress that she wore, or maybe it wasn't the Grammys, I don't know where she went, but it was like she was going to some event show and was not wearing a scandalous dress. Sorry, she looked good, whatever. He's crazy. So then she gives this whole rundown, she's telling all of her experiences, and the kicker is that one of her stories was that she was scrolling on TikTok one morning. She was like watching videos and the song of Morgan Wallen's Last Night We Let the Liquor Talk, which like given, I don't know. I'm not a Morgan Wallen fan. The chair throwing incidents and all of the terrible stuff he's done isn't great. But his songs are very catchy. So that's the problem. But anyway, so she was going upstairs to make breakfast in the New York City apartment that he owns, but she was like living in with him. And she starts singing this song because it's stuck in her head, like any normal person. And he freaks out on her is like, I can't believe you're singing another man's song under my roof in the house that I own.
Oh my God, give me a fucking break.
Crazy. And so she shares that story on the podcast. And then the next day, the Boston Bruins TikTok posts that TikTok of the players singing that song. It's obviously showing support of Brianna Chicken Fry. And yeah, Boston taking care of one of their own. Love to see it.
Oh my God. I know. 360.
I know. Oh, but there's like so much more to the lore. Right. It's crazy. He is messed up. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to one of my friends. I was like, we've all been there, you know, dated a narcissist. And she was like, have we? And I was like, oh.
Some of us have been.
Maybe not for everyone. But yeah, it was really, I mean, I'm so Team Brianna because it's like she turned down $12 million, which is life-changing money for her and her family and whatever. But also, like, the previous relationships that Zach Bryan had, everyone's saying those two past girlfriends 100% signed NDAs because they've never come out and said anything about him. And Brianna was like, I'm in a position where I can use my platform to, like, A, warn other girls about him, and B, like, stand on business, essentially. Yeah. She was like, yeah, it would have been nice to have $12 million, but for what? You're going to take my voice and take all my experiences? Like, hell no, screw you, I'm out.
It's so important. I'm so glad that she decided to do that, because obviously that's not a situation most people, most women would be able to find themselves 100%. In.
I also just have to really appreciate that kind of trolling, because again, that, you know, that's my vibe. It's like subtle.
It's a nice little jab. It's also just like so, like, I'm glad that she's doing it, but I'm also like, I hope that she's okay and she has like
totally
security and safety, because you don't know how these men will be, especially when she's like going on something so public as like a podcast that freaking, I mean, she hosts with Dave Portnoy.
Right.
You know, that's just like a lot of eyeballs and tainting his image. But also, like, the amount of money that he would give to her, like, he'd make back so fast too. Uh-huh. So I'm just glad that she was like, fuck you and your money.
Yep.
And took to a very public stage. Yep. Good for her. I don't know if I would be so brave.
Yeah. So now I don't know really how I can support her other than I'm following her on Instagram and TikTok. And I watched the entire hour and a half episode of BFFs. But any other ways you have ideas for me, I'm game, because we're Team Brianna over here.
Oh, yes. Team Brianna for sure. Oh, God.
I know. Heavy one. Exhausting. Really kicking it off on a strong note.
Yeah. Next up on Playing the Field, we have some divine intervention, or should I say, a miracle win for an otherwise struggling New Orleans Saints, courtesy of one of the holiest men, probably the holiest man, aside from God himself, the Pope.
The mother freaking Pope. This past week, the official X account for Pope Francis, which I didn't know he had a Twitter account.
I didn't either.
Also, sorry, it's Twitter to me. Right. they began posting tweets like the hashtag Saints are precious pearls and are always living and relevant. But when you do, for the NFL, when you hashtag a team's like catchphrase or their team name or something, it comes up with their team logo next to it. Uh-huh. So for the Jets, it's like Jet Up, and then the Jets logo comes up. So if you hashtag Saints, that little logo of theirs pops up.
I don't even know what it is. It's like a little coat of arms almost.
Yeah,
it's like,
it has a name. I don't know it. What is it? Fleur-de-lis?
Fleur-de-lis, okay.
I'll take it. Sounds right. But so when you use that hashtag, that's what pops up. So it turns out that the official hashtag of the New Orleans Saints was popping up while the Pope's Twitter account was tweeting hashtag Saints. I don't know why he was only hashtagging the word Saints, though.
So, I know. Interesting. And I'm like, has this not happened before?
Also,
like,
why obviously it's not him tweeting. I would love to think that it is.
We don't know. He is 87 years old, though.
Yeah.
But yeah, the team responded by offering the Pope an official team jersey. And then on Sunday, they ended their losing streak, their 7-game losing streak, with a win over the Falcons. And following the game, they responded to one of the Pope's tweets with, "We weren't losing after this." Yeah, I'm like, do you think the Pope even knows what the Saints are in the United States of America? Like,
who knows? Maybe
how tapped into football is he? Who knows? Does he even know what's happening on his account?
Maybe he is like the world's biggest football fan and we have no idea.
He's just silently rooting. This is his only way he can really show support.
He is a Saints fan and he was trying to trick people, right? You know, that he was.
Well, because I don't think that it would be a good like PR look if, you know, you can stop me if I'm wrong, but this is just like the way that my brain was thinking. I was like, it doesn't feel, and I can't explain it, but the NFL does not feel like saint, like holy to me. And so I feel like it would be bad if the Pope publicly was like, go Saints. I mean, of all the things he could be supporting, championing in his life.
Right.
So I think this is his way of silently supporting something that is perhaps looked at as consumeristic.
Okay.
Unholy.
I like this take.
You like my conspiracy theory?
Yeah. I'm here for the conspiracy theory that the Pope is actually a Saints fan. like he's actually been rooting on the NFL secretly this whole time.
But I'm also like, how has this not happened before? Because he must be talking about Saints a lot. I looked in the past couple days.
Yeah.
It has happened at least 3 times. Like, he loves tweeting about Saints.
Yeah, he does.
So I'm like, is this a new feature on X? I don't think it is.
I don't know. It's not new, the little logo guy. I just don't know why he's only hashtagging Saints. So, like, that's my confusion there.
What else in the NFL could he... What could he... I'm trying to think of, like, what other team he could hashtag that would bring up... I think it's just the Saints.
Well, like, every team has one. I don't know if it's, like, if you just write, like, for the Kansas City Chiefs, if you just wrote, like, Chiefs, or if... Oh, I think it's actually Chiefs Kingdom you write, and then that, like, their logo pops up. So every team has one. But I guess Saints is just the most...
It's the most...
Makes the most sense
right,
for the Pope,
for
you know?
The Pope.
Yeah. Obviously, I do think that the Saints also... played a great game because...
So you don't think it's just divine intervention?
I don't think it's just
it
divine intervention.
It has to do with athleticism and skill?
I know. But Alvin Kamara, I think we do have to shout him out. He became the Saints' all-time leading rusher. So that means as a running back, he has run for more yards than anyone in the history of the franchise.
Oh.
So more power to him.
Okay, Alvin.
And then also Darren Rizzi, he was the special teams coordinator. We mentioned it last week, I think, that the Saints head coach was fired and he took over.
Oh, right.
And a lot of the time, like, that interim head coach taking the head coaching, or the interim head coach taking that position, sparks just like a new...
Some breath of fresh air?
Yeah, just like a new drive in the offense, defense.
In a good way usually or bad?
Yeah, usually in a good way, just because it's just like a... kicking the butt to everyone, being like, oh, wow, like, we're playing that poorly that someone got fired over it. So it's kind of like a uniting factor. But yeah, that was a crazy game. And I think the Pope definitely helped them, but I wouldn't completely discredit them.
So we're continuing playing the field with a story out of the NBA. So during Sunday's game against the Boston Celtics, Bucks star Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Nice.
Oh, you did that one with ease.
Yeah,
first try, guys.
Yeah, you did.
Extended his hand out to Celtics' Jaylen Brown.
Mm-hmm.
So he... we can just do it.
Yeah, yeah. And then it's like,
he did one of those. So basically, if you're not watching the video, he like stuck out his hand to give a handshake, and then he was like, nah, psych, and then brushed over his head, kind of like what your dad would do. Mm-hmm. Or any adult, really. My brothers did this shit to me all the time, where they would just like try and shake your hand, and then they would fake you out, and then you would feel really embarrassed.
Mm-hmm.
And then he put his hand out again to Jaylen Brown after he dissed him, and
he like smacked it away.
It didn't. The handshake was incomplete.
It all started because Giannis was like going up to shoot a basket and essentially elbowed Jaylen Brown pretty obviously in the head.
Yeah.
And then as they were jogging back to the other side of the court, then the handshake, or lack thereof, took place. So, it turns out he was not amused.
No.
The Celtics did go on to win the game 113-107. But afterward, he was asked about the incident, and he said, quote, Giannis is a child. I'm just focused on helping my team get a win, and that's what we did tonight.
Giannis was asked about the quote as well, and he responded by saying, quote, we always joke around with the flow of the game. It's something that I do with my kids. I play around. Giannis, I got news for you. Jaylen Brown's not your kid.
No.
I didn't know if you know that.
Yeah,
but,
he did not find that funny.
I wouldn't find it funny either. I'd be so tight.
Yeah, I mean, it's always annoying when you look dumb in front of other people, and I get really pissed off when people make me look dumb or feel stupid. That's like my biggest gripe of all. So I obviously get Jaylen Brown feeling that way. But he also, in the comments that he made afterward, he wasn't like that heated about it. It was like, okay, we won anyway, so...
I was going to say, also, the Celtics are doing way better than the Bucks right now.
Yeah.
So, JB, real winner.
Yeah.
Sorry, Giannis.
Totally.
So, we're going to close out playing the field with just like a little look ahead. Did you see that this, I think it's on Friday on Netflix, Jake Paul and Mike Tyson will be fighting?
Yeah, I feel like this has been a long time coming because I feel like it got decided maybe even like years ago, but yes, I saw that it's happening. No, I do not care. But yes, I do hope that Mike Tyson wins because Jake Paul just is really annoying.
He's annoying.
Yeah.
I feel like his only fan base is like 14-year-old boys who have problems with toxic masculinity at the ripe young age of 14. It's very alarming.
Yeah.
Are you going to watch? I think I'm going to catch the highlight reel.
Yeah, I'll do that.
Okay.
Okay.
We're going to talk about it next week.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. Okay, so that's it for Playing the Field. When we get back, we'll be joined by our guest, Nora Princiati, host of the Ringer NFL Show and the Every Single Album podcast to talk all things NFL and Taylor Swift. So don't go anywhere.
So we're back, and that means it's time to bring in our guest, Nora Princiati. Nora, thank you so much for joining us today. We're so happy you're here.
Thank you guys for having me. I'm so excited.
Pumped that you're here. Before we dive into our NFL topics for the day, I want to talk about the Taylor Swift of it all. You host a podcast that goes deep into the Taylorverse. You analyze her lyrics. You talk about her choices, her relationships. You also cover other pop stars. But as somebody who also knows all about the NFL, I want to ask you for your perspective on Taylor's impact on the NFL fandom and just the NFL world and vice versa.
Yeah, it's been so crazy. Like these were already sort of my two little content universes, before they collided. I think it's been, you know, I think it feels a little bit more subtle this season than it did last season. I think to me, the thing is just like, they are these two hubs of culture that are sort of monocultural in a way that we don't have around a lot of things anymore. And so then the amount of people that like, you know, maybe you could have had a conversation about football with them, or you could have had a conversation about Taylor Swift with them, but like where people had this common ground of either not quite understanding each other, but trying to, or just like having worlds collide, I think has been so crazy. I think there was some like data and stuff last year about female viewership and there were some like makeup brands and stuff that started advertising with the league that hadn't been doing that before. I don't think any of that's been like huge, but I just think the sort of cultural phenomenon of it all has been my favorite part of it.
Yeah.
As a staunch fan of both, was it ever on your bingo card that these two worlds sort of like handshake together? You know, like that handshake emoji meme.
I always used to think, so before I worked at The Ringer, I covered the New England Patriots during the years when they were winning Super Bowls all the time. And she was kind of in that era, to, you know, pardon the pun, where she, like, she was really around New England a lot. Like, she bought her house in Rhode Island. And I was always like, when is Taylor Swift going to date a Patriots player? Like, it just, there was something that, like, felt right about it. But no, I would not have anticipated that in the way that it's happened now.
It's funny you say that because, like, I understand why you would make that connection. But to me, like, Taylor Swift's not a New Englander. She's not a Northeaster girly.
Yeah.
She isn't really, but she does have, like, you know, especially earlier in her career when she would wear all of those, she's like a very preppy dresser.
That's true. Yeah. So she did channel the East Coast in that sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Wait, before we go any further, I was asking you quickly, you are in tune and caught up with all of the Zach Bryan, Brianna Chicken Fry drama, correct?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard not to be.
Did you see the TikTok of the Boston Bruins players singing the Morgan Wallen, like, last night we let the liquor talk?
No. Okay. This one I haven't
seen. Okay. This one I need you to look up at some point after the show, because the Boston Bruins players are like walking around singing that clip because of the whole freak out that he had when she was singing it. And I'm the biggest now Boston Bruins fan because of just their solidarity with Brianna.
That is so funny. I do feel like, I mean, I'm like fully speculating wildly here on your show, but like from everything that it feels like we're learning, I have to imagine that historically Zach has maybe rubbed people the wrong way on a number of instances. And perhaps, you know, I don't want to encourage a pile on, but like you can just see people kind of coming out of the woodwork and maybe jumping on the
and perhaps piling on.
But no, I think that's a very fair statement to make, because I feel like now everyone is, because he's no longer dating Brianna, everyone's being very honest about how they felt about him the whole time.
Yeah.
It happens that way.
Yeah, it's okay. Not great. Okay, so I'm sure you saw the viral clip from Sunday's Chiefs game where Taylor Swift was in attendance She was also dressed in Versace, by the way. Stunning. And Taylor was escorted through the tunnel on a cart, and when she stepped off, officials could be heard saying, "Stay back, stay back." To which Taylor responded, "Please stay back, please." And once again, proving that she's the queen we already knew her to be. So what did you think about all of that and how she approaches the games and the interactions in general?
I mean, you said it, like, you know, polite queen.
Yeah.
I do think, like, I think one of the things that has kind of clicked for me watching her navigate those stadiums, and it's always so funny because you see the Swifties online make jokes about, like, oh, the Chiefs are playing in Taylor's stadium tonight, and Taylor Swift is being so nice, and she's visiting her stadiums during her off season, or
like at a charity case.
Yeah,
yeah, totally. And it is funny because, like, I would always, you know, long before any of this happened, when I would go to work, if I would go to a game, you know, you walk through either the tunnels below a stadium or go into some of the boxes, and they'll have these big photos from other events that have taken place at whatever stadium it
particularly
is.
Particularly at Gillette.
Yes. It's definitely at Gillette. There's one at Arrowhead. There's always a photo of Taylor Swift. Mm-hmm. And I would always, like, years ago, just be like, oh, that's my girl. but it's, and it's, like, funny for me to think about that now. But I do think, like, one kind of factor that makes this all work is that NFL stadiums are set up, like, logistically and with security in a way that not a lot of places that she could go would be.
Okay, yeah, I like this.
And so I think when she walks in, like, you kind of, you know, she's always kind of strutting her stuff.
Yeah.
And, like, feels very relaxed.
Right, right.
And I do think it's because she's gotten very comfortable with just sort of, like, how it all works there.
We were talking earlier this season that, like, people were speculating, oh, have they broken up or something, because she wasn't going to some of the away games, but, like, going to the home games where she's comfortable, True. Where her security team knows the stadium really well, like, that all makes sense.
Yeah, I always thought that was very silly because she had never, like, other than she went to a playoff game in Buffalo on the road last year, and then she went to an away game when it was against the Jets in primetime in New York, a city where she lives. Mm-hmm. So other than that, she had never gone to an away game.
Right.
Like, it wasn't, she was not breaking any sort of meaningful pattern by not going, not going on the road. But I think you're right. Like, she's just so much more comfortable with the security at Arrowhead.
Yeah.
Guys, I've never even thought about this in my life. Like, these logistical questions of a pop star at a football game.
She goes around in a janitorial cart.
She knows every alleyway of these stadiums, I'm sure, because of those sneaking around in her carts.
My goodness. Well, whatever Taylor's doing, it's certainly working for her man's team because they are just unbeatable. Oh, my God. So let's jump in with some NFL conversations. It is time for Tuesday Morning Quarterback. So the Chiefs proved once again that they are a team of destiny, despite holding just a 2-point lead going into the final seconds of their game against the Broncos this past Sunday. Who other but Patrick Mahomes and company? They defied the odds.
Classic. Chiefs can't lose. On what should have been a easy 35-yard field goal, linebacker Leo Chenault blocked the kick, bringing the Chiefs to 9-0, making them the only undefeated team left in the league. What was your reaction when you saw the blocked kick?
I mean, it's like half surprise, right? Because it's a surprising play. It's not what you expect. But at the same time, like, that team finding a way to win.
Not a surprise.
It feels so inevitable. And even, like, he blocked a kick. He blocked, like, Leo Chenault blocked an extra point, I believe, in the Super Bowl, a game last year that went to overtime that, like, mathematically, it would be pretty easy to argue they would not have won were it not for that play. And I do think, like, those are the types of little situational moments that really, really good teams, like, they're sort of the only ones who have time to practice them.
Yeah.
Where they're like, okay, we're good on most of this stuff. Like, let's run the blocked kick play 15 times today in practice. And then you see when it comes in handy. So it's that mixture of, like, whoa, did that just happen? And also, of course, that just happened.
Exactly. Like, I do think it's inevitable that the Chiefs lose a game this year. If they went undefeated, that would be very impressive. But I just think it's inevitable. And everyone was kind of, at least that I was around, was like, oh my God, it's going to be to the Broncos. Like, this is insane. But you're right. Completely hitting the nail on the head of just, like, them practicing those finer tuned details is what makes a good team, a great team, I think.
And that's why, like, so I think it's very fair to say that they have not played particularly impressively.
Correct.
Offensively.
Yep.
Up to this point in the season. Okay. They haven't lost a game, of course. But I do think it's, like, fair to believe your eyes, right? Like, they're very low ranked in explosive plays. They get just enough. And if they continued to play like that, I do think it would limit their ceiling. I think it would come back to haunt them. The thing where I feel like they'll be just fine is, okay, they're still 9-0. They're absolutely fine in terms of playoff seeding standings, all that. And we're going to count out Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid to not get better, like to not find a way to figure it out.
Exactly.
So I think it's not that they're like, it's not that they can play this way and win a Super Bowl. Like, I really truly do not think that they could, but I do think they'll get better. And now they've like bought themselves so much margin for error and so much time in order to do that.
Guys, I'm not even that invested in the Chiefs, but like for some reason, I'm very scared for when they probably will inevitably lose. Like, I don't know what, it just feels like such a, I mean, every week we come back to the show.
Good though, because there's that, like, you always hear those stories from the 2007 Patriots where they went undefeated in the regular season and ended up losing the Super Bowl to the Giants, where they felt like it was this like huge monkey on their back.
Mm-hmm.
That, yeah, right.
Like, you almost just have to lose, get it over with, rip the Band-Aid off, and then like learn from it and then move on.
Right. Otherwise, the pressure is just too great.
Yeah. I would take one loss in the regular season every single time. Like, you don't want to mess around postseason.
Yeah.
All right. So meanwhile, as the Chiefs wrapped up their win with a blocked kick, another kicker was having a rough day in Tampa Bay. 49ers kicker Jake Moody missed 3 of his 6 field goal attempts. He ended up redeeming himself with a last second field goal to win the game, but not before almost sending fans into a fit with his repeated misses.
I have to say, when I was watching him continually miss these kicks, it immediately put me at the pong table. That last cup on the pong table. And I just like, I'm shooting my shot constantly.
Can't
I'm
letting, get it.
The team is on my back and I just can't get it.
And
it's just like, you got to walk away in silence.
Yeah.
But things came to a head late in the fourth quarter when teammate Deebo Samuel appeared to go after Moody, leading him to take a swipe. I mean, a swipe is even like maybe not strong enough of a word. It felt like he was about to grab his teammate Tabor Pepper's neck after the game. And he explained his outburst really by saying, quote, "Normally I don't even get like that, but just frustrated in the heat of battle, a close game. And I kind of got out of character a little bit, but I'll talk to Moody and we'll get past it." You know, I don't like to describe our dynamic in terms of like the NFL. Cause like, you know, lack of testosterone for one, not super competitive, but it's like, if you came for my neck, Caroline, I don't know if we
could
work past
that. Your literal neck. Your literal
neck. Like, yes, for my literal neck. I don't know if we could get past that. I'm not going to lie.
That could be tough. But you know what the funny thing is? And obviously, Nora, we're going to get to your thoughts. But like, I think it was funny how it was Tabor Pepper's neck that he came for. And then he was like, I'll talk to Moody. We'll figure it out. I was like, oh, okay. He doesn't care about Tabor Pepper.
He's not considered at all.
Yeah. What'd you think when you saw the throat shove?
Yeah, I mean, not good, right? Like, in general, we like to avoid the shoving of the throat. It's not ideal. It's not what you want. Players will always explain that stuff away. It's the heat of the moment. They are, like, really, really, really hyped up. I am always like, I'd walk away, man.
It's not that serious, bro.
No one's lunging at me during my vocational time.
Yeah. Also, though, like, it's so funny because Deebo was like, I wasn't even telling him anything that egregious. I was just saying to lock in, and then Tabor Pepper like overreacted in
he
Kyle Shanahan's words.
Bro.
Yeah, he like went berserk over it, and then he got the throat shove. But you know, sometimes you do need a kick in the butt from a teammate more so than a coach, because that just hits different, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, I think like within the sort of dynamics of a team, a player who's as good as Deebo is, I guess, an effective messenger for something like that.
For sure.
I'm just firmly in the like no pushing on the sideline.
And particularly throat shoving.
Yeah, throat shoving. Yeah.
I would rather take a kick in the butt, personally.
Like a literal kick in the butt.
A literal kick in the arse. Yes, please.
Okay, we're going to move on from one game ending kick to another. I'm sure you both saw Sunday night's thrilling conclusion to the Lions win over the Texans. Kicker Jake Bates played hero once again with a 52-yard walk-off field goal that just slipped inside the left upright. This is the same Jake Bates, yes, that we talked about, coming from a job literally selling bricks in Houston, might I add, to now being 14 of 14 on the season on field goals. So, Nora, I want to get your thoughts on the 8-1 Lions, but also what do you have to say about Jake Bates?
I really can't remember the last kick I saw go through the uprights with that little room to spare. Like, yep. It felt like there's that meme and that famous story of when, I'm trying to remember what game it was, but when the refs were checking it down a distance, checking a first down where they used the index card to measure where the tip of the football was relative to the chains.
Oh my God.
And like, I felt like you could have put that index card in between the ball and the side of the upright. Like, that was just so crazy to me. But the Lions, like, I think you can read that game two ways. Mm-hmm. And one is, okay, this is the performance. Jared Goff throws more interceptions in that game than he did all of last season. This is the performance that you're scared your quarterback like still has in him. Mm-hmm. And theoretically that could come out again if you're facing another good defense in the playoffs. Like, it's a little, I think, nerve-wracking for Lions fans to go, okay, like, Jared has made incredible strides as a player, has like really come into his own, but some of the warts that were part of why he ended up getting traded away from Los Angeles, like, they still exist and there's still a possibility that they can come out at the wrong time. I think the flip side of that and why you could feel really good is you could look at that performance and go, oh, even when that happens, like, there are multiple ways that this team can win. There are multiple ways that they can just figure out how to stick in there, and defense can help, special teams can help. And it's going to be okay even if they do get an off day for the quarterback. In general, I mean, it's just been a great season for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Chiefs seem to be the team of destiny in the AFC, but the Lions are continuing to look pretty hot. So do you feel like this team is going to be Super Bowl bound? Do you think they're a little too vulnerable? What are you reading from this?
I think they're definitely, you know, I've been like really on the Packers train. It's definitely been a much more up and down season, but I just think like, when they are healthy, I think the way that Jordan Love plays gives them a little bit of a higher ceiling. But I do think that's a bit of a, I wouldn't call it a hot take, but it's medium warm. I think if you're looking at the NFC and looking for sort of like the consensus Super Bowl contender, I think it's hard to say that it's anybody but Detroit. I mean, the way that like they've mostly scored like 30 points a game for most of the season. Again, other than that game, Jared's been really clean with the football. I think defensively, you know, they didn't have Zay Smith in there. He's still getting acclimated, and I do think that'll make a difference because I have had some concerns about their defense, just figuring out how to play when they don't have Aiden Hutchinson, who is off to such an incredible season before he got hurt. Mm-hmm. So I would say that I think they're the sort of obvious NFC Super Bowl pick. And I would say that even given that I think I'm a little bit more like lukewarm on them than some people.
Okay. You heard it here first. It's a good one.
Not for nothing, but I don't want to talk about winning teams anymore. Let's talk about a team that seems to continue to fall apart, please.
Correct.
And that's a 3-6 Dallas Cowboys. So they suffered a brutal loss to the Eagles at home on Sunday. I'm not sure where we want to begin, but Caroline, I kind of want to start with the glaring problem at the stadium. Yeah. Pun intended, please.
I think everyone is talking about this. So obviously CeeDee Lamb missed a touchdown catch because he was blinded by the sun that was coming in through these massive windows in AT&T Stadium.
I also just want to say this story made one of the top stories in our Daily Skim newsletter today. We don't often cover sports as like our top three.
Yeah.
So I feel like this has got to be a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, it's America's team.
It's resonating, now, yeah.
Yeah, clearly. So there's like these big windows. Okay, so he was asked after the game, do you think that, or are you in favor of putting up curtains? Because whenever a other like major either sporting event or like the Eras Tour or WrestleMania comes into AT&T Stadium, they put in massive blackout curtains over these windows obviously they're like larger than life windows, but they put the blackout curtains over them so that the sun isn't a factor or a problem. Mm-hmm. So everyone else does it. So they asked CD Lamb, hey, are you in favor of the curtains? And he said 1,000%. And then they asked Jerry Jones, why don't you put up curtains? And obviously his response was, why don't we tear down the whole damn building and build a new one? I don't know why that's the
jumping to conclusions
and not the curtains. And then he did add, like, we know where the sun will be when we pick what side of the field we're going to be on at, like, after kickoff and whatever. Then he made a comment about the moon. I don't even know. He was just going on.
No, hold on. We have to talk about, what about the moon? Like, it was crazy. What is he saying?
He's like, yes, what about the moon?
Do we live on the moon?
He's like, no, this is how it ended. He was like, you know, I don't want to tear down the whole damn stadium, blah, 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 blah. What about the sun? We know where the sun is going to be. Where's the moon? Where is it, Jerry?
No, Jerry, really, where is the moon? And why should we care about the moon?
So funny.
So bizarre. But, like, I don't know what to make of it. What do you think of the entire situation?
I mean, I think it's hilarious.
Yeah, of course.
Like, first of all, again, I'm so glad that you guys pointed this out, because I think this has gotten missed when this has been covered in a number of ways. They have the curtains.
Yes,
they exist. They don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
They just need to choose to use the curtains.
Correct.
Like, not only do we not have to tear down the stadium, we don't have to add curtains.
Yeah. It's given weaponized incompetence. Yeah. You familiar with that? Like, that's what Jerry Jones is exhibiting right now.
But also, what would happen if somebody said the phrase weaponized incompetence to Jerry Jones?
Oh, God.
He would literally spontaneously combust.
That would be scary. Okay, but, like, also, not for nothing, this isn't the first time that Cowboys players have kind of critiqued the facilities that they use, because, you know, the whole story of people getting tours while the team practices and, like, is lifting weights, and people, like, knock on the glass like they're zoo animals. So it's like, I understand that Jerry Jones has this, like, other side of the football team that clearly makes him a profit, but why aren't we covering the windows? Like, that's not gonna cost you any money.
Yeah, no, it's a totally, I mean, it's a different type of organization.
Yeah.
I found myself, like, reading about this and just sort of laughing about people's tweets and stuff yesterday and being like, this organization is worth $10 billion. Like, simply how?
Yeah. Insane. It's just, things keep going wrong for them. The final game we want to talk about with you, Nora, is the nail biter between the Steelers and the Commanders this past Sunday. There were a lot of takeaways from that game. Let's start with the insane catch by George Pickens in the back of the end zone. Did you see it? And what do you think of it compared to some of the other catches of this year?
I mean, yeah, I saw it. He's amazing. Like, he had such a game because he had that catch. There was the interception when he was targeted where there was a Commanders player who was not the guy who caught the ball, where George Pickens just turns around and, like, tackles the guy, but tackle sort of sells it short.
He just, like, mauls him by the shoulder.
Yeah, he mauled this man.
Yeah.
That felt personal.
And it was, like, pretty incidental to the play.
Yeah, he was not involved. He was truly just, like, a bystander.
Yeah, and George Pickens was like, all right, my time to shine.
Yeah, he had quite the performance.
He is a big personality where I think you can see it come through in how he plays.
Yeah.
And I know that has not been without sort of drama in terms of, you know, he was sort of quasi-benched earlier in the season. Mm-hmm. But there's something about watching him where I just, like, always find myself laughing.
I don't know if you noticed this, Hendy. I'm sure you did. But the Steelers went ahead in the game on a touchdown throw to one Mike Williams.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of know that guy. We just talked about him last week. What did you think when you saw the former New York Jet hauling such a big touchdown?
Obviously very happy for him, because Mike Williams is very sweet and it was always very nice to me. But yeah, I'm sure that the Jets fans were not pleased that he was traded away and then scored a touchdown.
Yeah. He did his thing.
Not great.
Well, yeah, Nora, did you see the Instagram post from Mike Williams after that game?
I did, or I heard about it, that people were getting into the hashtags and stuff and wondering if there was a little bit of shade being thrown at Aaron Rodgers, given that the play that he scored on was fairly similar. The route concept was fairly similar to the one that Rodgers called him out for not running properly on the play that ended, that turned into the game losing, I guess, interception Rodgers threw at the end of the Monday night game against the Bills earlier this season.
What do you often see football players hashtag shading in on their Instagrams? Like, is that a thing you really see?
I mean, I wouldn't call it common. I would say that like the Instagram hijinks, the social media drama, the like the unfollowing of the team. Mm-hmm. I do think that that is,
or like taking them out of your bio.
Yeah. Ooh, that's yeah. Cool.
It's a big one.
That's like becoming more and more common. And like wide receivers definitely like lead the league.
Why? Are they like diva?
They're just like, they're dramatic.
Yeah. They're known for the theatrics. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like a little bit of diva behavior.
Yeah.
I mean that as a compliment.
only a compliment.
There has to be one.
Okay. So the Steelers ended the game by baiting the Commanders into a neutral zone infraction, after which quarterback Russell Wilson treated us to a little shimmy shake celebration. And after the game, head coach Mike Tomlin refused to say whether or not the team was actually planning a QB sneak, nor what did you think of the play, and how impressed have you been overall with the Steelers this season?
I'm super impressed.
Yeah.
I am particularly since they made the switch to go from Justin Fields to Russell Wilson, which, like, I will be so honest with you guys, I did not think would work out well.
I don't think a lot of people did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and Fields, you know, he wasn't lighting the world on fire, but he was definitely playing more consistently and with fewer mistakes than he had at any time previously in his career. So it felt like, oh, you know, maybe he'll even get better from this point. And when they put Russ in, I was like, okay, we'll see. I wonder if they'll regret this. Is this something that like Tomlin is doing just because he feels like he made this guy a promise, and it's not, you know, that's admirable, but that's not usually how we see these teams operate. They have just really found a way to construct what they do offensively based on what he is still really good at, which is like, it is like we were talking about with the Mike Williams touchdown. Like, it is perimeter deep balls. They support it with the run game. Their defense is obviously great.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Tomlin is just such a steady coach and they find ways to win games. So to me, like, they are the, you know, I guess you could say the Vikings too, but like they are the surprise team in the entire league to me, really.
Well, there you have it, people. That's all for our edition of Tuesday Morning Quarterback with Nora. Nora, thanks so much for being here. Can you tell our listeners where they can keep up with you and tell us a little bit about your shows real quick?
Well, thank you for having me, first of all. So theringer.com, that's where I do all my writing. And I am on the Ringer NFL show talking about big NFL topics every Wednesday or Thursday, kind of depending on when that post based on news. And then every single album is my other show, my music podcast. I co-host that with Nathan Hubbard. That goes up once a week on Fridays. It has its own feed, every single album, wherever you get your podcasts. A lot of Taylor Swift talk, but also especially, you know, we just had Grammy nominations. It's been such a year for the pop girlies.
Mm-hmm.
And we cover it all.
Oh, yeah. Love to hear it. Awesome, Nora. Thank you so much. You're awesome. And we hope we get to talk to you again soon.
Thank you guys for having me.
All right, we conclude this episode, as we always do, with a round of Send It, where we share four of our favorite viral moments from the week that you should be sending to your group chat. Blake, you have the floor. Who's your first nominee?
Okay, my first nominee, I hope everybody saw the final celebration in the Vikings 12-7 win over Jacksonville. But in case you missed it, Viking safety Cameron Bynum sealed the win with a huge interception.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really care about that. What I care about is how he celebrated by giving a very accurate rendition of the viral breaking sensation, Ray Gunn, her now famous routine from the Paris Olympics. We talked about her on this very show. So Bynum's teammates followed him into the end zone where he replicated the routine. Honestly, 10 out of 10, I would say. What are your thoughts on this, on the celebration?
We've talked about Cameron Bynum before because he did the Parent Trap handshake.
Oh my God, he's loaded. He's locked and loaded.
His celebrations are not to be messed with when he gets an interception. Also, he just continues to get interceptions. So, like, good for him. Yeah, he's doing his theatrics on the field, and then he's also performing on the field. So he's really crushing all aspects. But I thought it was freaking hilarious. I didn't know exactly what it was when I first saw it. And then when I saw the videos side by side, I was dying because you're right. Like, it is to the T, like move for move.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. So I thought it was.
I mean, it's also good timing because he kind of is filling the gap that Ray Gunn is leaving.
You're right.
She just announced her retirement from high level competition this week. But she clarified her breaking career isn't entirely over. I mean, personally, I think it's so wrong that she went to the Paris Olympics, what, like 6 months ago, and yep. now she's deciding to retire?
Yeah, she said, I'm going out on top.
That's not on top. I mean, if you want to call it that, sure, yeah, on top. Girl, quit while you can.
I mean, like, on top, like, notoriety-wise.
Right. She's riding that wave.
Exactly.
Anyway, what do you got?
Okay, I have the honor of explaining to you the best ref call of the weekend. Now, the honor belongs to Sean Hockley, who treated NFL fans in Munich to a penalty call in what sounded like perfect German.
Verstand, Angriff.
Oh.
5 Yards Strafen. It's by the center. It's third down.
Oh, look at Sean Hockley hooked on Fox.
Showing up.
He is... Oh, you know a Hockley is going to flex.
Why was it special, you might ask? I will explain. He wasn't the first Hockley to do it. Sean Hockley is the son of Ed Hockley, who made a similar call in Spanish during the NFL's first ever game in Mexico back in 2005.
Aww.
So it was like this sweet little ode to his dad, but also I just really
liked
it.
To German people.
Yeah, and also my question for you is... When are you going to memorize the NFL playbook so that you can then give us a call in French? Because I grew up in high school taking Latin. It is a dead language. You cannot speak it. So this is our representation right now.
First of all, these words don't exist in French because they don't watch like American football. You know what I mean? So you have to like say it with
you could piecemeal something together.
With a French accent.
Yeah, but you could like figure it out.
Can you give me something to say? Like what did he say?
Like let's say like the player was offsides.
The player was offsides. Like that's how you would say it. Like I'd be like the joueur was how you say, you know.
You know what you're giving.
Fucking Jack Cousteau, like I don't know, Pink Panther.
No, you're giving the little chef from Ratatouille who he's mean.
Oh, he's like the head chef.
Yeah, the head mean chef. But like, that's exactly how he talks.
You're so right.
The movie does.
Also, though, I will say it would be way more impressive if you can figure this out in Latin. So I'm nominating you for.
That's rude. You're not. Okay. You're just absolutely rude.
Okay. I'm up next with another send it. We need to talk about the celebration that followed Ole Miss pulling off an upset victory over Georgia on Saturday. Immediately after the 28-10 win, which put Ole Miss in position to make the playoffs this season. Their fans rushed the field. They also, I should say, they rushed the field a little early.
Yeah, they did.
Like 16 seconds on the clock, but whatever.
not important.
Mm-hmm. But as we know from a previous episode, this celebration probably cost the team, like $250,000, which they'll have to pay to Georgia. But it was the Oxford Police Department that actually, I think, really deserves the credit here because they really got in on the fun.
Yeah.
So they used the department's official X account to encourage fans to carry the freshly downed goalposts to the square in Oxford. I think it was so funny how they're like, don't bring it to the river like those other fans. Bring it to the square.
Yeah.
Go to the square. Like yeah. They kind of like gave permission.
We'll see you at the goal. We'll see you at the square soon, Mr. Goalpost. And it was like, did they just give them the idea?
Yeah, they definitely did.
Yeah.
But what did you think of the trick? Also, did you see that they had like traffic cameras following them?
That I love the goalpost coming down because I just think it's hilarious. Like that's the instinct now is the college fans think, okay, we're going to throw whatever we want on the field during games now, including tortillas. And then we're also going to rip these goalposts down.
It feels very caveman-like. Just like very primal, just like lift heavy thing.
It's just very college student. Like I'm going to do something dumb and not think anything of it.
Watching the swarm of them, though, also carry the goalposts also reminded me of that episode of SpongeBob where the Alaskan bullworm comes.
Oh, my God.
And so Patrick is like, we need to move the city. And then he makes everyone push Bikini Bottom. That's kind of a deep cut.
It's a good reference. I'm a big SpongeBob fan.
Yeah. So the producer, Sean, just let me know that the SEC actually is fining $350,000 because of what I said. They rushed the field too early.
Okay. Well, to Georgia, that will go. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that it won't make their football program any better than it already is. Mm-hmm. Okay, so my last send it is, did you see the moment LeBron James secured his second consecutive triple-double this weekend, which, by the way, sets a record for the oldest player with back-to-back triple-doubles because LeBron's just breaking his own records at this point. In the final minutes of their 123-103 win over the Raptors, James can be seen grabbing his 10th rebound of the game and then pointing to a fan in the stands. Why was he pointing, you ask? That fan just got finished informing LeBron that he was one rebound away from fulfilling a parlay and hitting the milestone. So after the game, LeBron acknowledged the fan's influence on the play. There is a trend of fans yelling at players about prop bets and the like, are we here for it? Or is LeBron now going to regret helping that fan?
LeBron doesn't care.
No, he doesn't.
He doesn't care. He probably also, I mean, do you think he knew that he was up? Besides, like, would he have known if the fan hadn't pointed it out that he was up for his, like, second consecutive triple-double?
Probably, like, because I think he is always aware of that. Yeah.
Really?
But I don't think that he would have given the nod, you know, to that fan.
Oh, of course not.
Which I think...
He wouldn't just give out nods for free.
Right, no. But I think which is going to come back to bite him in the butt, because I'm sure now people are going to feel gonna very...
Yeah, he's just in on it.
Full of themselves to start yelling at LeBron.
That's true.
Yeah. Okay, what's your send it for the week?
Sorry, that was a really big dramatic sigh for no reason.
It was really dramatic.
I'm going to say Ray Gun. Are you kidding? The Ray Gun touchdown
we're
celebration?
In
Come on.
We're in
I love that. Yeah. I mean, I just want to learn it.
I'm here for Cameron Bynum's interception celebrations. I think that there should be more interceptions for him so that we can see what else is in his bag. And I just want to keep seeing what he can do.
I want
him
to see the deepest cuts. Like, I can't even, I couldn't even think of one that I would be like, holy shit, how did he know to do that? Like,
yeah.
What else is there?
I know, right? Like, he keeps topping himself. That's why I want to see, like, what is your next idea? Very curious.
Well, TBD, keep throwing those interceptions to one Cameron Bynum, please.
Yeah. That's it for this week's episode of Well Played, presented by The Skim. Thanks so much for listening, and thanks again to our guest, Nora Princiati.
Yes, we'll be back in the studio next Tuesday with another episode of Well Played, so be sure you're subscribed to the show wherever you're listening.
Blake, tell people where they can follow you.
Instagram, BLAAA4KSE. I also actually have a Foodstagram that I'm going to plug, because sometimes I feel like I'm a little more interesting there. And that's easier to remember. It's I'm a Jersey Tomato.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
I only have one Instagram. It's CG Handy.
It's plenty.
Okay.
It's plenty.
Okay. That's really sweet of you.
But yeah, please leave us a review. We'd like to know what you think of the show.
Also, oh my God, wait, really quickly.
Did you get a DM?
I got a DM. Blake informed me that my DMs were closed. I didn't know that I did that. But Ricky Lee.
Yes,
DM'd
again.
Me, and she was really sweet. She informed me that she didn't know who to root for this weekend in the Jets-Cardinals game. But yeah, it was
engaged
just
listener.
It was just really lovely getting a DM that wasn't like offensive or mean or like trying to ask for feet pics. So love a friendly DM. My DMs are now open to any and all friends.
Open for business. Yeah. For friends, please.
Yeah, that's why I prefaced.
Yes. You can also check out our Well Played YouTube channel, where we have a full length video of today's episode. Just search Well Played by This Game on YouTube.
Until next time. Next time. Keep that in. Until next time, thanks for listening to Well Played,
the only podcast in a league of its own.